the most valuable skill that I think I learned as an attorney among them is listening. That is an incredibly important skill for most attorneys. That's invaluable. People understand that you heard not only what they said, but what they meant. Then they will feel respected and understood.
This is Associations Thrive, the podcast celebrating successful associations and their leaders. I'm your host, Joanna Pineda, CEO and Chief Troublemaker at Matrix Group International. Listen in as top association executives tell all, revealing the creative and innovative ways they're increasing membership, generating revenue, nurturing engagement, and reimagining their organizations. By the way, if you've launched a new initiative, created new member services, or updated your governance structure and are seeing great results, I want to hear your story, and so do my listeners. I'd love to have you as a guest. Go to podcast.matrixgroup.net and apply to be on Associations Thrive. Now let's dive into this week's show. Today, I'm speaking with Chris Moore, president of the Software and Information Industry Association, or SIIA. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's good to be with you.
Chris, tell us about SIIA.
We are an association of about 360 companies, all of whom are in the business of information. And so as an organization, what that means is we provide a forum for and advocate around a healthy information ecosystem. And that to us means creation, dissemination, and productive use. The way we do that, the way we're set up, is essentially with a couple of verticals, one that operates in market data, another one that operates in business-to-business media, and a policy umbrella that tries to look over the waterfront and confront issues so that all of our constituent parts can thrive.
Well, Chris, give me an example of some of your members. If you've got 360 members, I gather they're large companies, because that's not a big number.
Right. There are some that are quite small. We have members, some of them you're probably familiar with. So we have companies like Apple and Google and Meta. We have companies in Amazon. We have companies like Relex and Thomson Reuters, as well as firms like Bloomberg and the London Stock Exchange, Pearson, McGraw-Hill, Cengage, and other folks in the educational technology space.
So Chris, the companies that you just mentioned also sort of are tech companies, but what brings them to SIIA, it sounds like, is the fact that they collect and disseminate and transform and sell data. Somehow they traffic in data in some way, shape, or form.
Years ago, if you think about late 80s, early 90s, mid 90s, particularly early 90s, most information was sold by the copy. You went to a bookstore, you bought a book. You went to a record store, you bought a record. Over time, what has happened is information increasingly began being sold as a service. And so when that happened, a couple of things, certain core interests don't change, but there's an entire ecosystem that gets created around these businesses. And you see that now in the policy field around artificial intelligence, around privacy, around intellectual property. There are all kinds of issues that get implicated by this type of change. And at the same time, certain businesses have immutable characteristics, let's say. And so it's important for those folks to have a chance to get together and discuss what's on their mind as in terms of best practices and whether it's in market data or in audience development and business-to-business publishing or some other kind of endeavor that we might cover through our programming.
Chris, the data that these companies collect is so vastly different. I mean, like Facebook is going to collect information about its users and their browsing habits, I guess, and their demographics, versus a Thomson Reuters. I guess they've got data about the world because they've got news, but they also have data about their subscribers. And then, I don't know, you've got a publishing house that maybe has completely different type of data. So how are you kind of melding the interests of all these different types of companies?
There's a bunch of different interests that get implicated in what you're talking about.
Hmm.
And those cut across different industries. So for example, if we're talking about firms like Thomson Reuters, it's true, they have a news business. They also have Westlaw.
Ah.
And they also have kind of a public records business. And so around that, one of the pillars of our advocacy is that there's a First Amendment right to disseminate truthful, lawfully acquired information. Now, that sounds pretty obvious when you say it that way. It's like, yeah, well, of course there is. But when you look at, for example, the privacy laws in Europe, you have a right to request deletion from somebody else's books. That's not something that United States law has historically permitted. And it's something we were very active in advocating about to make sure that it didn't make its way into United States law because it's unconstitutional.
Wow.
And that doesn't matter. I mean, if you think about, for example, business-to-business data, so customer lists, and someone calls you and says, well, I want you to delete me from your list. Well, why? You might need it for a particular reason. You might still need it because they were a really big customer and you needed to run analysis on what went wrong. There are lots of reasons you may want to keep it. You know, maybe you want to rent a list of customers or former customers to someone for a limited marketing purpose. All of those things are generally legally permissible, and we would want to be sure that in many cases they stay that way. And that cuts across a whole bunch of industries.
But it sounds like you're also providing a forum where these companies can get together, talk about this, know that their interests are being protected, but you also are probably developing best practices and standards for the safe handling of this data.
Oh, we do for sure. In another side of our house, there's something called alternative data, which has nothing to do with alternative facts. To shorthand it, it's non-SEC published information that's used for trading. And what these firms will do is they can get information from almost anywhere, but a good deal of it can be web scraping. And then they do sentiment analysis for trading purposes. And so in that context, you have to be quite careful with what you do, because if you start to apply these algorithms to non-public information, you're looking at an insider trading problem. So we have developed our alt data group in our financial information division has developed best practices on a whole bunch of different aspects of this, ranging from how to handle IP issues that might come up to, you know, we're working on best practices for dealing with information that either from or might go to China.
Wow. Now I'm really glad that there's a group like SIA kind of thinking about this stuff. You're just blowing my mind with all of this.
Our members do interesting things.
Well, it's obvious that we got a lot to talk about when it comes to SIIA, but I want to turn to your journey. You're trained as an attorney. I know you. You and I are friends. We're in a peer group together. And I know that you are a practicing attorney. So how'd you get introduced to associations?
Mainly as clients.
Ah.
You know, when I started practicing, we represented the content industries. So we represented publishers and studios and software firms. And my current employer was one of my clients. I always really liked copyright law and the law around information. So the copyright stuff, the First Amendment stuff, the IP, for me, that was always really interesting. But I have no artistic talent whatsoever. Me singing is a cruel thing to do to anybody in earshot. But I loved the flexibility of it, of the subject matter. I mean, movies and software and music and books and so forth. And so I was lucky enough to work on things that I thought were really interesting. And so the idea of being a general counsel and not having to bill time anymore was exciting.
Right. So the general counsel position at SIA came up?
Yeah. And I was like, I would enjoy that. That would be a good career change. Did that job for about 7 years. And so I had two different CEOs in that time. As GC, my boss, Jeff Joseph, had left to take another opportunity. And then at that point, I thought, there's something here. I mean, we can build something, a whole that's bigger than the sum of its parts. And Jeff had done a lot of work getting us in that direction. I mean, a lot of my job was continuing the work that he'd already started.
So then the CEO position becomes available, you apply for it, and the board says, you're our guy.
Pretty much, yeah. Although I was acting for 8 months, which don't ever do that.
I see.
Don't ever be acting anything.
So, Chris, what's that like? I mean, as GC, you've got a specific portfolio, but as president, you've got responsibility for everything, including membership and events and certification. What's that transition like?
It's a lot. I feel like I knew my old role really well.
Hmm.
In the sense that if my client had a problem, the worst thing that he could say to me would be, you never told me that could happen. So I would stay up as late as I needed to stay up, figuring out, okay, what if this happened? What if this happened? What do we do here? But then once it's done, it's your call. And I go home.
Right. And also, yes, there are lots of things that could happen, but it's not infinite, hopefully.
No, it's not infinite. The 80% is usually pretty obvious. As you get into that last 20%, it becomes more and more difficult to winnow down the realistic possibilities. My job is not necessarily to be the most prepared person in the room. My job is to find the best prepared people in the room.
Right. And that's a shift from being the attorney that is the most prepared to being the guy who pulls the team together.
Right. That shift exposes a lot of character flaws.
So did you try to do everything at first and now you're realizing you can't?
Yeah, I think I tried to do too much. I'm still working on it. I got a long way to go. I would try to handle stuff myself instead of trying to figure out how to delegate it. That ends up slowing things down.
So SIIA was your first association job, and now you're president. Got any words of advice for someone who's a first-time president or CEO?
Yeah, go to culinary school. No, I mean, look, the most valuable skill that I think I learned as an attorney among them is listening. That is an incredibly important skill for most attorneys. That's invaluable. People understand that you heard not only what they said, but what they meant.
Then they feel respected too and understood.
Then they will feel respected and understood.
Well, you went from being the subject matter expert to managing the subject matter experts, and that's been a transition.
Yeah. We cover so many different things that there's no way that anybody could be an expert in all this stuff. That just doesn't happen.
So how do you stay up on all the issues and topics that are affecting your members? Or how do you manage a team that's trying to do that so that then your members, your industry isn't getting blindsided? Because that's part of your job, right?
Yeah, but I mean, our policy team is, we hire for expertise and not for access.
I see. Okay.
All of our policy people are capable of looking out over the horizon and saying, oh, see that light over there? That's a train. And that is a huge help. I mean, we really have some extremely talented folks. One of the strengths, I think, of our team as a whole is that they really listen to their members. So the more the members drive the programming and the experience, the better the experience is. I mean, you know, there are certain things you can't let them do. You know, it's like, I know you guys are having a happy hour for us next week. Let's have vintage Dom Perignon. Like, yeah, no, we're not going to do that.
Right.
But if they tell you, hey, we think this is important, then odds are it's probably important. They know more about their business than we do.
All right, well, let's turn to SIIA. And you've just said that it's important to listen to the members and you let them drive some of the decisions. So how are you doing that? How are you getting this feedback from the members?
From a governance perspective.
In any area. I mean, how to run events, governance, what policy topics to focus on?
So a couple of different ways. One way is through constituency groups. For example, we have an engineering stream in the market data area where the engineers get together, the software engineers get together, and they talk about engineering. I understood maybe 5 words on the slide. That's kind of one, forming these industry best practices, such as the ones I mentioned about alt data, which we published on our website. That's another one. We have a CEO council for our business-to-business media CEOs. And then in the policy sphere, it's interesting because what I've found is that we have, you know, regular meetings and calls on issue area. We have them on privacy. We have them on IP. We've got them on education and so forth. But the really interesting conversations are one-on-one. We'll have these conversations with members who may not necessarily say certain things in front of their competitors.
Of course.
None of it's even remotely troubling. It's straight up policy analysis. It's not like, oh, so-and-so's charging too much. None of that occurs. But it's, hey, we heard this about so-and-so because, you know, the Hill is high school on steroids.
Right.
So that information is guarded, can be guarded jealously. So it'll be like, okay, we heard this, but don't tell anybody. It's fine. But that helps us chart a course for everyone.
Okay, hang on. But how are you getting this data one-on-one? Is your staff just constantly on the phone and meeting with members?
Yes.
Ah.
We talk to them regularly.
You're just picking up the phone or are there these meetings?
Depends. Sometimes it's scheduled one-on-ones. For some, it's scheduled one-on-ones. For some, it's more of relationships that have been built up over time. Because, you know, we have established positions. A lot of these issues are rodeos we've ridden in before.
I see. Okay.
So we can call and say, okay, issue X comes up. Who's likely to be affected by this? I think we want to do this. That's consistent with what we've done before. Let's check with A, B, and C as representatives of this constituency and see if it flies.
And with a membership of under 400 members, you can get to really know them and be intimate with them.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well, let's talk about policy. So I checked on the website and you've got four key policies that you're focused on. Strengthen U.S. leadership in AI, modernize digital information policy, cultivate next generation leaders and workforce, and advance innovation in the U.S. and abroad. How do you navigate these policies with your diverse membership? Or is there sometimes conflict?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? So what do you do? Give us some secrets.
So one of the things that I really liked about being here is that having kind of both sides of the quote divide, close quote, in our membership, if any exists, is usually around the difference between content and technology.
Mm.
And so usually what that means is that they have to trust us to be straight with them. That's more important than anything else. If certain issues are just too hard for us to take a position on because of competing interests, that can happen sometimes. But the important thing is that if we get conflicted out, or even if we take a position, that members feel like we ran a fair process.
And you let them know why you got to that position.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't happen that often. Copyright issues are, we have people on both sides of that, and there are cases working their way through the courts now. But, you know, around privacy, around AI development, around policies that relate to educational technologies and government procurement and a whole bunch of other stuff, there's either broad agreement or let's call it indifference.
I see. Okay. So again, how are you soliciting the information from the members? Is that during all these communications?
Yes.
The meetings, the one-to-ones, et cetera, and you're kind of testing the waters.
That's right. And we formulate policy positions every year. Those run through a committee process. And so, you know, people know you can't anticipate every possible result of when a legislature picks up its crayons.
Right.
The core themes of our advocacy, though, are developed.
I'm curious in particular about something that you mentioned, which is the CEO Council. So tell us about that. Why is that important?
That's something that we do for our business-to-business media members. That community is tightly knit. There's a history there. I mean, our involvement, we acquired an association that at the time we acquired it, it was called American Business Media, and it's got its roots back to the early 20th century. It's a community. So these are people who, as a general rule, like getting together, and then we curate topics for them around, for example, audience development or AI deployment or certain metrics around platforms, or it depends. The slings and arrows of being acquired by private equity. That's another popular topic.
Oh, yes.
So we bring them together and they talk about that. We're looking to build out in the next year or so more robust constituency groups for them.
I see. And they get together in person?
It's Zoom. We have a couple of events a year for them. We have one called BIMS, Business Information Media Summit, which we just had in New Orleans. We have another event called the NEALS, which is an awards ceremony for editors. It's basically a celebration of achievements and content.
Well, speaking of events, what are you doing that's new and different in the area of events?
These industries change so fast that you kind of have to do something a little differently every time.
So they sort of expect new and different because they're new and different each time.
Yeah. We do a large event every 2 years called WFIC, which is the World Financial Information Conference. We do one in the United States and then one in Europe. Our last one was about 900 people, which is a lot of folks.
Yeah.
And the programming from year to year, it's all about market data. It's all about all pieces of the market data ecosystem. The stock exchanges aren't going away. They'll have stuff to say. But now the technology, you know, there's a whole new raft of technology that's coming in and being deployed. There are friends in AltData who are now, that's a growing constituency in our group. And so that's part of the programming. And the sponsors are contributing to this too. I mean, one of our sponsors came in and to demonstrate their platform processing capabilities, they had a Formula One simulator in the lobby that you could go and drive. And so we had a whole bunch of data on different people. I will say, thank God I didn't take my road test in that car. Then they gave a presentation on, in real time, how they were getting the data, how they were analyzing it, and made the jump to, this is the type of analysis you could do with market data.
How interesting.
Because these firms, they're trading on hundredths of a second, right? I mean, there's lots of issues. There's lots of processing power they need to use.
Chris, let me ask you a question. It sounds like the content itself changes all the time. So it's not the same old presentations, but it sounds like you're also opening yourself up to interesting ways to present the information.
We hope. Yeah.
Because like, you know, saying, hey, we're going to have a Formula One car, you know, collecting data and we're going to show you what we're doing with it. That's not something normally that you would have, but it sounds like they were like, hey, we want to do something different. And you said, yes, is that where the innovation's coming from? Like it's coming from your members?
Well, this was the sponsor.
As a sponsor, okay.
I suspect this was not their first rodeo. They probably run this before. But when they told us what they wanted to do, I mean, it made a lot of sense. The presentation was pretty well received.
So are you looking for new and unique opportunities to present content like that? Is that one way that you're innovating?
Sure. Yeah, that's one way. I mean, you know, I feel bad saying we were innovating. It wasn't our idea.
But you allowed them to do it.
We allowed them to do it.
Some other groups would be like, nope, can't do that. It's too weird. Can't have a car.
Yeah, right. Really, there's a few things that bring these people together. The networking opportunities and the quality of the content. Those two things. And there's only so many PowerPoint slides that someone can look through. There's only so many bullet points you can see. People love stories. They love to be surprised in a good way anyway. And finding that way of presenting, particularly over, I mean, the event was a 2.5 day event. I mean, it takes a lot of work. And so it's a really a combination of the members, our team, and the sponsors working together to produce things.
And you're really encouraging them to tell the stories in new and interesting ways. Like, how are you driving that? Because a lot of my clients, they'll put out a call for presentations and then they kind of take what they got.
Well, one of the things that we really try to do, and particularly with sponsors sometimes, if you're going to give them stage time, you're going to want to see the deck first.
I see. Okay.
Because what we try to do is we want to present them as thought leaders.
Hmm.
We want them to get brand presence. And that's interesting. That's what they're doing. That's relevant to me. And it's a very soft line between, hey, that was interesting. Joanna seems like a really smart person. I have a problem kind of like that. I should talk to them versus set it and forget it for 10 minutes of an infomercial.
Yeah. I got it. So that then the attendees felt like that was valuable information. Yes, that's a sponsor that I may want to talk to.
Exactly.
So everybody benefits, but you got to see the deck first. That's really good advice.
Yeah, we do. We look at presentations and it can be as simple as font size. Even with a 70 or 80 inch screen, Arial 14, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Chris, let me switch gears a little bit. The website talks about market insights as a member benefit. Are you doing research? What are you doing here?
So depending on the division, we do a combination of surveys and industry benchmarking. So for example, in business-to-business media, we had a firm that presented industry information around growth, subscription retention, et cetera. There are members of ours who will produce reports about the market data industry. And then they won't do the whole thing, but they'll present teasers at our events that our members find valuable. We do consumer surveys about particular aspects of public policy. We did one pretty interesting one last year about how people retrieve information on the internet as divided by age.
Oh, interesting. And Chris, how are you collecting this data? Is this a third party? Is it your staff doing it?
Third party.
So you're contracting out with a third party or third parties?
Yep.
And how are you deciding what to do research on? Again, is this like based on the members are asking for it?
Yeah.
Okay.
The members will tell us, we would like industry data on X. We would like a consumer survey about this issue. Also, in particularly in the what I would call the operating divisions, in other words, market data and business-to-business media, there are known players there who produce that kind of data that they find valuable. So there's a history.
So what I'm hearing is SIIA has a very close relationship with its members. You're in constant communication with them. And that's how you're knowing what to focus on, knowing what data they need, as well as getting feedback from them about how to guide your actions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I got to ask before we go, how are the recent actions of this administration affecting your members and what are you doing about it?
I'm going to give you the lawyer's answer, which is it depends.
Okay, yes. Well, give us an example. And are the members looking to you to help them navigate this?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of our key functions.
Okay.
I think with respect to a lot of the stuff that's gone on, there are areas where this administration potentially could be quite helpful. So for example, in the area of government procurement, it can be very difficult for a small business to get on the schedule because the threshold amount for those purchasing decisions is too low.
Mm.
That has a couple of effects. One, it shuts out small business. Two, it kind of stymies experimentation. You know, a lot of smaller tech firms and information firms, a $50,000 contract is not a huge contract.
Right.
But the threshold might be, and don't quote me on this because it's been a few months, but I think the threshold might be something like 25. And so if you raise it to 50, that allows for, okay, maybe a more agile approach to software development, for example. It's the government. You got to be careful, but it's also notoriously slow at innovating and experimenting. And sometimes there are good reasons for that, and sometimes there aren't. So this administration seems to be a bit more open to that type of reform, which is a good thing. You know, a lot of the work around artificial intelligence that was moved forward by the last administration started during the first Trump administration. And the sort of key principles around risk-based frameworks, in other words, you regulate the Spotify algorithm differently from one that operates a medical device.
Hmm.
That kind of stuff, that originated during the Trump administration. It was carried on by the Biden administration. And then all of those EOs were canceled and we're not quite sure what is coming next, but it seems like there's going to be a lot of rhyming. Because the work we do is nonpartisan. Our members' interests are largely nonpartisan. And so in terms of maintaining that, you know, a healthy innovation landscape, we really try to explain to the administrations of either party why the methods that they are proposing either will or won't achieve their stated ends. Sometimes we oppose the ends, and that's part of the job.
Chris, what about some of the policies around immigration? I mean, I attended an AWS event recently, and it must have been half Indian CEOs, as an example. So like, you know, is this affecting your members? Are they worried about it? Or are you not taking a position on it?
It's not historically an issue we cover a lot.
I see. Because you're all about the management of the data.
We're about the data. That's right. So our workforce interests are much more around the lines of how do the things that our members do help make a better workforce? How does AI help make a better workforce? Those kinds of questions.
Chris, it's May 2025. What are you looking forward to for the rest of the year?
Me personally, I'm really looking forward to continuing to grow in this role. It's challenging. And I feel like I'm slowly growing into it. That's encouraging to me. Like that part is fun, but I got to be sure to make time to unplug.
Well, you know, the other execs that I've had on the show really talk about how the past 6 months have been really, really intense and they need to make sure to unplug on a regular basis so that they can be at their best for their organizations.
Yes.
Chris, you and I have known each other for a few years now because we're in the same Vistage group, but I learned so much about you and about SIIA. Thank you so much for being on the show. We're going to have you back. Thanks for listening to Associations Thrive. We're so glad to have you here. You know, my personal mission and the mission of my company, Matrix Group International, is to help associations and nonprofits increase membership, generate revenue, and thrive in the digital space. I want to hear stories of how your organization is thriving in today's challenging landscape. Please apply to be on my show by going to podcast.matrixgroup.net. By the way, do you need help with a digital initiative? Maybe it's a website redesign, a new membership database, or a hybrid meeting that you're planning. I'd love to connect with you. Please visit the Matrix Group website at matrixgroup.net. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Associations Thrive. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a comment, and share it with your colleagues and friends. Bye!